She was the only black woman at an all-white slumber party. The next morning, she was found face down in the backyard, dead, battered, and broken. Tamla Horsford was a devoted mother of five, known for her warmth and laughter, not for recklessness. Yet authorities quickly labelled her death an accident, a fall from a second-story balcony after a night of drinking. No autopsy photos, no clear timeline, no interviews that added up. And when the family pushed for answers, they were met with silence, or worse, suspicion. The bruises didn't match a fall, the cuts weren't explained, and her blood alcohol level raised eyebrows. But so did the fact that the party's hosts worked for the sheriff's department. This wasn't just a tragedy, it was a test of how justice works when the victim is black, the witnesses are white, and the system protects its own. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Party That Should Have Been Safe. It was supposed to be a harmless adult sleepover. A few women, wine, pyjamas, laughter. Tamla Horsford had been invited by a fellow football mum from Forsyth County, Georgia. The host, Jean Myers, was organising a birthday celebration for herself. It was November 3rd, 2018. Chilly, but pleasant. The kind of night when people gather in warm kitchens, sip cocktails, and let their guard down. Tamla's husband, Leander, stayed home with the kids. He didn't know most of the women at the party, but Tamla was friendly, outgoing, and trusted. She baked cookies, worked a government job, and volunteered at school events. She had never been in any real trouble, and no one at the party expected her to become the centre of a national controversy just hours later. Arrival Tamla arrived late, around 8:30 p.m., with a bottle of tequila in hand. She wore a white onesie with paw prints, festive and comfortable. She smiled in photos, joked with the women, and video-called her stepdaughter before bedtime. That would be the last time any of her children saw her alive. Jean's house was suburban and well-kept. The guests, most of them white women in their 30s and 40s, knew each other. From their kids' football leagues or school events, a few men were present too, including Jean's boyfriend, Jose Barrera, a pre-trial officer with the Forsyth County court system. They drank. They played cards against humanity. They watched football on TV. By midnight, most had gone to bed. Except Tamla. She was last seen alive sometime after 1:30 a.m., standing alone on the back porch, smoking a cigarette, looking out into the darkness. The 911 call, at 8:59 a.m. the next morning, a call was made to 911. Jean Myers' voice was calm, too calm, many later argued, as she told dispatchers a woman had fallen off the balcony and was not moving. Jose Barrera got on the line too. He said Tamla was stiff and that her body was not breathing, lying face down in the yard. "We had a party last night," he explained. "She was drinking. We just found her dead. There was no urgency. No attempt to perform CPR. In fact, Barrera, the law enforcement professional, admitted he'd moved her leg to see if she was alive. He wasn't supposed to touch the scene. But he did. The first reports. When the sheriff's deputies arrived, they saw Tamla's body. Face down, arms bent at unnatural angles, legs outstretched. She still wore her pajama onesie. She was barefoot. The balcony above her was about 14 feet high. The official theory came fast. She must have fallen, drunk, disoriented, maybe trying to smoke. The problem? Her injuries didn't add up. Her wrist was dislocated, her legs were cut, her nose was broken. Her heart had a laceration. A rare injury that coroners say is more consistent with extreme blunt force or trauma from great height, like a car crash. The sheriff's office ruled it accidental, but the Georgia Bureau of Investigation wasn't called in until public pressure mounted, and by then, the evidence was tainted. The autopsy Tamla's family ordered a second independent autopsy. The findings were troubling. There were multiple blunt force injuries to her head, neck, torso, and extremities. There were cuts and abrasions on her arms and legs. There was a deep laceration to the right ventricle of her heart. Most alarming, there were no defensive wounds. Nothing suggested she'd fought someone. But everything suggested more than a fall. Her blood alcohol level was 0.238, almost 3 times the legal limit. There were also traces of THC and Xanax in her system. But Tamla didn't have a prescription for Xanax, and her family insists she wasn't known to use it. So how did it get in her body? No one knows. Or at least, no one is talking. The people at the party. There were 12 people at the party, 7 women, 3 men, 2 left early. That left 9 people in the house overnight. Each gave their version of the night. But their stories varied in key ways. One said they heard a door open around 1:40 a.m. Another claimed Tamla had gone to bed by then. Someone said they heard water running. Others claimed silence. No one saw her fall. And the house had security cameras. But the footage from the back porch, the key location, was conveniently missing. The system had stopped recording. No explanation was ever provided. Jose Barrera, the boyfriend of the host and a court officer, later accessed the incident report illegally. He was fired for it, but not charged. Why was he snooping? What was he afraid might come out? The Sheriff's Department, Forsyth County, has a long, painful racial history. It was once notorious for driving out nearly all of its black residents in the early 1900s through violence and intimidation. Oprah Winfrey famously visited the county in 1987 to confront this dark past. Tamla Horsford's death reawakened that legacy. The Sheriff's Department handling the case had direct connections to party attendees. Some worked in or near the justice system. Some had personal ties to investigators. The department closed the case within months, calling it an unfortunate accident. No foul play, no suspects, no charges. The family, however, wasn't buying it, and neither were thousands of others. The public outcry. When the case went viral in 2019 and again in 2020 during the George Floyd protests, it drew national attention. Celebrities tweeted. Activists called for reopening the investigation. Under mounting pressure, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, GBI, finally reviewed the case. But they too found no evidence of foul play. They closed it again in 2021. Still, the bruises, the lacerations, the silence, the inconsistencies, they haunt everyone who's looked closely. Tamla's family still doesn't believe she just fell. Because what kind of fall tears your heart? And why did no one at the party seem even remotely shaken? Family in limbo. Leander Horsford lost his wife. Their 6 kids lost a mother. And what they were given in return was a theory, thin and fraying at the edges. They asked for footage. They were told it didn't exist. They asked for records. They were told the investigation was closed. They asked for truth. What they got was silence. Tamla Horsford was buried, mourned, and memorialized. But justice was never served, because the system that was supposed to protect her failed her. And the people who were there that night, they've all moved on. Chapter 2, A Mother's Body, A Nation's Question. Tamla Horsford's story wasn't supposed to matter. Not to the system. Not to the sheriff's office. Not to the guests at that party. But it did. Because what happened to her exposed a quiet epidemic. The deadly combination of race, power, silence, and systems that do not protect black women. and in a small southern town that still bore the stains of segregation, her broken body became a symbol, a question, a demand, a family demanding answers. After the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office declared Tamla's death an accident, her family wasn't just left grieving, they were left fighting. They hired attorney Ralph Fernandez, a veteran investigator with a history of taking on tough cases. His findings weren't gentle. In fact, they were damning. "It appears Tamla was involved in a struggle," he wrote. "There were abrasions, lacerations, and contusions inconsistent with a simple fall." He didn't call it a murder. He didn't have to. The report made it clear. This wasn't open and shut. Fernandez questioned the delay in calling 911. He noted the scene was disturbed. He called out the conflicting witness statements and raised serious concerns about possible foul play. And then came the part that couldn't be ignored. "The case strongly suggests homicide." The sheriff's office brushed it off. But the family, and much of the country, did not. Who was Tamla Horsford? She was more than a case file. Tamla wasn't just the woman at the sleepover. She was a mother of five boys. She was married. She worked for the Department of Human Services. She loved music, dancing, and her Caribbean roots. Born in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, raised with warmth and discipline. She'd been in Georgia for over a decade, trying to raise her family in peace. Photos show her full of joy, big hair, big laugh, full presence. She wasn't wild, she wasn't careless, and those who knew her best say she didn't mix pills with alcohol. She didn't get sloppy, and she never would have climbed a cold metal balcony railing in the middle of the night just to smoke. Theories that painted her as reckless were not just unproven. They were insulting. They served one purpose, to close the case and protect someone else. Silent guests, loud questions. Of the nine people who spent the night at John Meyer's house, not one has changed their story. Not one has publicly questioned the official version, and not one has been charged. Some claimed they were asleep. Others said they thought Tamla had gone to bed. None admitted seeing her fall. None said they heard a scream. Yet her body was found face down in the grass. Broken wrist, broken neck, broken heart. No one noticed. Or did they all agree not to notice? These weren't random strangers. They were community members, court officials, wives, mothers. And in Forsyth County, a place where justice has long been selective, the idea that they were treated more like colleagues than suspects isn't far-fetched. Jose Barrera, the man in the middle. Jose Barrera wasn't just Jan's boyfriend. He was a former pre-trial officer with connections in law enforcement. He was also one of the first voices on the 911 call, calm, controlled, not panicked. Later, he admitted accessing the incident report without authorization. That cost him his job, but not his freedom. Why did he do it? What was he looking for? Who was he trying to protect? He claimed he was simply checking in out of concern. But no one could explain why the security system's back porch footage, the exact spot where Tamla allegedly fell, was mysteriously disabled. Was it a coincidence or clean-up? The missing footage. The security system at Jean Meyer's home was supposed to capture everything. It had worked fine before the party, it worked again afterward. But between 1:40 a.m. and 8:45 a.m., the time frame of Tamla's death, it stopped recording. That just happened to be when Tamla fell. Why? No technical explanation was ever given, and no one in law enforcement pressed the issue. A woman died, and the footage that could have shown what happened just vanished. Would that be accepted if the roles were reversed? If a white woman died at a party of black guests? Would the camera wasn't working be good enough? A history that can't be ignored. Forsyth County is not just any Georgia county. In 1912, it forcibly removed almost all of its black residents. Hundreds fled under threat of violence, their land stolen or abandoned. For decades, it remained virtually all white. In 1987, Oprah Winfrey filmed a now-famous town hall there. When she asked white residents about race, the answers were disturbing. "We don't want them here," one said. "They bring crime," said another. The racism was not hidden. It was embedded. By 2018, Forsyth County was more diverse, but not by much. And for many black families like the Horsfords, living there meant staying aware, staying alert, and staying quiet. Tamla didn't do anything wrong. She simply walked into a space that wasn't made for her, and she never walked out. The reopen request. In 2020, during the George Floyd protests, Tamla's case caught fire on social media. Thousands posted about her. Celebrities, including T.I. and 50 Cent, demanded justice. Petitions surged. Under pressure, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation agreed to re-examine the case. They reviewed evidence, interviewed guests, re-examined the autopsy. In 2021, they announced their findings. "There is no evidence to suggest foul play." Case closed. Again, no charges, no arrests, no closure. The bruises still speak. What's left are bruises. Deep, patterned, unexplained. They're not just physical, they're cultural, social, historical. Tamla's death speaks to a pattern. When black women die under suspicious circumstances, their stories are too often dismissed. They're labelled emotional, overreacting, just drunk, just high, not worth investigating, not worth believing. The conspiracy of silence. No one said she screamed. No one said she cried. No one heard a thud. Tamla Horsford's death is surrounded by people who either know something and won't say it, or never cared enough to ask. A conspiracy doesn't have to be written down. Sometimes it's just a room full of people silently agreeing, "Let's move on." And law enforcement did. What would justice look like? Not every death is a murder. Not every bruise is a crime. But every unanswered question deserves attention. Justice wouldn't mean revenge. It would mean transparency, accountability, an admission that the case was handled sloppily, or worse, deliberately avoided. It would mean charging those who tampered with evidence, releasing the full 911 call, releasing the autopsy photos, admitting that something wasn't right. But none of that happened. Instead, Tamla Horsford's death was folded into a drawer, labelled accidental and forgotten by everyone but her family. Her children deserve more. What do you tell a child when their mother dies at a sleepover? What do you tell them when the police say, "She fell," but the body says otherwise? What do you say when the system shrugs? You tell them this. We keep asking. Because silence is what allowed this to happen. And silence is what keeps it happening. The final image, Tamla Horsford, face down in the backyard, cold grass against her cheek, pajamas soaked with dew, a mother, a friend, a woman who didn't belong, but tried to anyway. And in the end, that's what killed her. Theories and conspiracies, racial bias or genuine tragedy. Theory. 1. The fall was staged. Some believe Tamla was already dead before her body was moved to the backyard. The bruising pattern, stiffness, and lack of blood pooling where she lay suggests post-mortem repositioning. Theory 2. Xanax was slipped. In her blood contained Xanax, but she didn't have a prescription. Was she unknowingly drugged? Theory 3. She witnessed something she shouldn't have. Several at the party worked in the court system. Could Tamla have overheard something? An affair? A confession? A crime? Theory 4. Racial targeting. She was the only black woman in a white space, in a county with a history of racial hostility. Some argue she was targeted, not by chance, but by prejudice. Counter theory, it was just a drunken fall. Investigators insist the injuries are consistent with a high fall, but independent pathologists and even the family's own experts reject that. So the question remains, do you believe the official story, or do you believe something darker was covered up?